what we're doing this last one is we're finishing up the segment of vows, and we started with I take you, and then to have and to hold, and then for better or worse. And one person this morning said, "Is it till death do us part?" We're gonna talk about death. No, we're gonna do to love and to cherish. That's gonna be this morning, to love and to cherish. And we'll just add on that last part, till death do us part, when we get to the end. But today we just want to talk about what it means to love and to cherish one another. I want to start with a couple passages of Scripture. So where I'd like to invite you to turn is Deuteronomy chapter 7, which may be a surprising passage for some of you. Like, we're going to talk about love, and you're going to take us to Deuteronomy? Yeah, Deuteronomy chapter 7. I've been meditating on this passage recently, and it is so rich. And I want to start in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 6. And here Moses is talking to the people of Israel. And if you remember the context of the book of Deuteronomy, they're standing right on the border of the Jordan River. So after 40 years of wilderness wanderings, they're led back up to the plains of Moab. They're about to cross into the promised land. Moses is not going to take them. Remember, he's not allowed to cross over into the promised land. Joshua's going to do that. But Moses stands on the plains of Moab, and he gives them Deuteronomy. Many scholars think this is like a series of sermons, like Moses' last sermons. And here he's with the people, and look at what he says in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 6. He says, "For thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all the people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord," look at this next verse, fascinating. "The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any people, for you are the fewest of all people. But because the Lord," what does it say? "Loved you." Because the Lord loved you. That's why. Because he loved you. I was thinking about this story I heard. It was about Valentine's Day. And I don't know how you gentlemen in the room are on Valentine's Day. Perhaps you're like me and you wait until the end to get a card. Have you ever done that? You waited till the end to get a card. Like, it's Valentine's Day. On my way home from work, I'm going to stop at CVS. I'm going to pull in there and get a Valentine's Day card. And so you pull in there. And if you've waited till Valentine's Day to get a Valentine's Day card, you know the dilemma, don't you? There's like 3 cards left. Yeah, it's not too good. It's not too good. And so you're in there, and you're looking over the few cards that are left, and you find one that will do. You know, it'll do. And you realize this wouldn't have been my top pick card, but there's not much to choose from. So you select this. You said, "I'm going to make up for it with everything that I'm going to write in it." And so you get this card, and you have a pen, and right there in CVS, you just begin to write, and you just start writing, "Honey, I love you because you do the dishes, and I love you because you cook such wonderful meals, and I love you because you're beautiful, and I love you because," and you just go on and on and on. And there, while you're writing this long discourse about all the reasons why you love your wife, in comes this other guy. And you can tell, like, he's in a worse state than you, because now it's down to 2 cards that are left, right? And he looks and he debates, and you see him do the exact same thing, and he finally grabs one, and he opens it up and probably has the same idea. He pulls out his pen, and you're watching him because he's just stalled out. "I love you," and he can't think of anything, and you're kind of chuckling inside, like, "Oh, look, I've got 14 things already as to reasons why I love my spouse." You can't even come up with one. You're thinking to yourself in pride, "Oh, my wife's going to love this one. I love her because she cooks and because she cleans and because she's beautiful and because, and you got all these." And he's there. He's right. "It's I love you," and he's stalled. And then he writes this, "I love you just because," and he closes the card. Now, which card is better? The second card is better. "I love you because you clean." Well, what happens when she can't clean the house anymore? "I love you because you cook such good meals." What happens when she has a bad meal? "I love you because you're beautiful." What happens when you get old or you get in a car accident or you get sick? You see, if you hang love onto those posts, they're not going to last, are they? The better card was this one. I love you just because. And when I think about this Deuteronomy 7, it's not I love you because you're the greatest nation among all the nations, because you're the most wealthy. I mean, you'll get that in Deuteronomy. You keep reading, you'll find out. Like, but you didn't have any money. You were slaves for 400 years. You had nothing. It's not because of all the money you had. It's not because of the magnitude of your nation. It's not because of any of these other reasons. I chose to lay my love on you. It's just because. And I think there's something very powerful in that. Remember, a great marriage is one that increasingly reflects Christ's love for his church. And it's not because of our goodness that he loves us. He just lays his love on us. And I think there's something for us to learn in marriage. Stop hanging your love on the coat hooks of these deeds and acts and external things because they're not going to last. Make a choice. Make a choice to lay your love on this person because. Now, there is something that I've come across in counseling where I've talked to people about love, and it's so confusing these days. So many people have a wrong view of love. Would you agree with that? Yeah, I mean, people all around us, it's probably because they get their ideas about love from the songs that they listen to or the movies that they watch or the culture that's all around them and not from Scripture. And so they have this idea, and I've tried to conceptualize this to help people understand this, because I talk about love in marriage counseling a lot. And a lot of people have an idea, and I'll use a metaphor that maybe you'll be able to catch here. They have this idea that when they were born, they were given a bowl. Not a real bowl, but a metaphorical bowl. They're given a bowl, and in that bowl was poured some love. And so here you are, you're born, and you're given this bowl, and it has some love. Be careful how you hold that thing. Don't spill any of that and waste it. You've only got a certain amount of love for your life, so be very careful how you walk through life holding this bowl. Can you picture it? I mean, can you picture a bowl filled with some sort of a liquid, and you're walking very carefully? Now, then they go into a stage of life in which there's going to be an exchange. So they get a little bit older, and now we're going to begin to exchange some love. And so people walk up to each other with their bowls. And they say, I'll give you a little ladle of my love if what? If you give me some of yours. Because I don't want my bowl to be empty. Or we see other people in life, and they've been hurt, and they've been abused, and they act as though this bowl has been tipped over, and they'll never have love again. It's all been poured out. It's been lost. Wasted, squandered. And it's almost like that's how to view love. But I want to suggest to you a different model. I want to suggest to you a different, maybe a different metaphor. And that is, instead of viewing love like a bowl in which you have this certain quantity for your life, you have to be very judicious who you give it to. Your mom said, don't give love to that person. They'll never give it back to you. Instead of living life judiciously and trading and bartering and going into relationships thinking, I've got to get something from you. I've got to get something from you. I've got to get something from you before I can give something to you. Instead of thinking about love that way, what if we thought about love like a spring, like a wellspring coming up from the ground that doesn't stop bubbling? I mean, what if love was a little bit more that way? And I'll tell you when I thought about this. I thought about it when I read Romans chapter 5, verse 5, how it talks about Christ and he sheds his love abroad in our hearts. Like, in other words, it's like there is an overflowing spring of love that he pours into you so that you don't have to worry about not having enough. It just caused me to, it just turned my idea of love upside down in the sense that it was like, I don't have to be judicious with my love as though I'm going to lose some and never have enough for me. People will even write books about that. Make sure you love yourself. Make sure you show some self-love. And it's because they're viewing it as though you're going to not have enough if you give it all away. And they've got a wrong picture. It's not a bowl. It's a wellspring. And that wellspring comes from Christ. His love is shed abroad. It's poured out richly, lavishly in your hearts. And it's not going to stop. And what I've discovered is that people who know that they're truly loved, they can love. So somewhere in your marriage, maybe you've hit some difficulties. Or maybe you know someone who's hit some difficulties when it comes to love. Because that's what we're talking about, to love and to cherish. Maybe there's someone who's hit some difficulties. And one of the ways to change that is to really start by acknowledging that you are loved. That you're loved. Because people who feel loved can love. And if you're in your marriage and you don't feel like you can love this other person, then I would suggest you back up, rewind, and really think about this. Because when you're confident that his love has been shed abroad in your heart, it's overflowing, you're going to feel free to share that with someone else. And so today, that's what we want to talk about. We just want to talk about to love and to cherish. And maybe you can think about Deuteronomy 7, verses 6 through 8, and Romans chapter 5, verse 5. But we want to think about love. Now, unfortunately, you know, people who start out, you know, the beginning of marriage with idealistic distortion, we talk about that. They start out where everything is great and everything is awesome and I love this person and everything about them and even the things that are different. You fast forward a number of years and pretty soon you have people sitting in your office that are kind of like, let's see, they're kind of like this. If you were my husband, I'd poison your coffee. Yeah, well, if you were my wife, I'd drink it, right? I mean, what happened here along the way? How did they get from loving affection to something like this? Maybe it had to do with their conflict. I mean, maybe they didn't discover how to handle conflict. Maybe one of them was a fight to win, or another one was an exploder. Maybe someone yielded and withdrew. We don't know, but maybe they just weren't handling conflict the right way. Maybe they never learned that when difficulty comes in marriage, you have to handle it by lovingly confronting or lovingly covering. Love covers or love confronts. Maybe they didn't learn that. I don't know what the situation was, but somewhere along the line, this couple got a wrong view of love. Let me just ask you, the people you know, have you ever heard someone say this? You know, I just fell out of love. Have you ever heard that? It's fascinating to me. I'll meet with someone up at the Air Force Base. They'll sit in my office, and they're trying to justify to me, I'm a complete stranger, but they're trying to justify to me why they have the right to leave their spouse. And one of the most common reasons is I've just fallen out of love. I just fell out of love. It's almost as though they view it like love is a nest, you know, where there's eggs or little baby birds. I'm a baby bird in the love nest, and somehow I fell out. I've just fallen out. Like they're a victim in this. They're a victim. They've fallen out of love. People on the other side, when they approach love, they talk about I've fallen into love as though it's a mud puddle, you know, like you slipped and fell into love. But I would suggest to you, love isn't a nest that you fall out of, and it's not a mud puddle you fall into. It's a choice that you make. Isn't it true? I mean, if you've been married, the youngest married couples in here have been married for more than a year, and so you already know. I'm looking at the two of you. You already know it's a choice because you, like this person who, whenever you encountered them in dating environments, they always had good breath. But then you got married and you woke up one morning, you're like, man, you have bad breath, you know? You had to make a choice. You had to make a choice. Where the hair was always done perfect and then it wasn't one day. You know, I mean, there's choices along the way that we have to make. Remember we said for better or for worse, you hit those worst days and you're making a choice. So I want to suggest to you that love isn't like a nest. It's not like a mud puddle. You know, like the Righteous Brothers from 1964, if any of you know them, you've lost that loving feeling. It's not necessarily a feeling. It's not a place or a location. It's a choice that you make. Now, we already spent time in 1 Corinthians 13, but just remember 1 Corinthians 13. Do you remember all those words in 1 Corinthians 13? There are these participles, and they're telling you that love suffers long. You make a choice to be long-suffering. Love doesn't boast. Love is not easily provoked. Love thinks no evil. Love rejoices not in iniquity. It rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things. It believes all things. It hopes all things. It endures all things. Love never fails. Why? Because you're making that choice. And I just want to encourage you, if you're kind of tired or you're worn out or you're frustrated, then maybe one of the things God wants you to do this weekend is just make a fresh choice. Make a fresh choice to love. And I think that would be something out of obedience to Christ. Now, there are some people who have studied love for a long time, and some things are just, I just want to tell you, they're just common sense. Or I would say common grace. That's what I would say. Common sense, common grace. There was a study that was done, and I came across a study. I said, wow, that's just common sense, common grace. But there's a lot of people who could benefit from this. It was by a guy named John Gottman, and he did a study. It was fascinating to me because to me this was like reality TV before reality TV was a thing. What he did is he built a house in Seattle, Washington, and he put cameras through the public spaces of the house. And so he just recorded these couples' interactions, and he would have couples live there. He did it for 30 years. He was a researcher. For 30 years, he had people live in this house, and he recorded the public spaces of the home. And what he was doing is just watching couples and trying to find out, are there any similarities between happy and harmonious couples? So he was studying, like, this couple seems happy and harmonious. What do they do? How do they live? And he did it for 30 years. So that was an interesting study to me. And what he came up with, he published his results in something. Again, this is common grace. This isn't from the Bible. You don't turn to like 2 Ezekiel chapter 14 and find this. This is just common sense and common grace, but it comes from him studying couples for 30 years. And this is what he came up with. He said, listen, if couples just had 5 hours that they would regularly spend with each other and invest in these things, they would find some benefits. This is what he noticed from happy and harmonious couples. They did some of these things. And just take a look at these, and you'll realize these are just common sense, common grace things. But the first one he said were partings. Like, what if you just spent 2 minutes a day and you had purposeful partings? And what he meant by that is someone's going to go to work, or you're both going to go 2 different directions to your jobs. But before you go separate ways, make sure you connect. And it might look like you just talk about the day, or it might be like some of you do. You pray together before the day starts. That's your party. 2 minutes a day. Before you go separate ways, you pray together, or you embrace, or you talk about the day, but you do something regularly to connect before you separate for the day. The second thing he said was reunions. Well, what happens when you get back from that 8 or 9 hour workday? What do? And we're seeing problems in this. I see it all the time in my office. People are terrible at this one on reunions. They come in, they're tired from work, and listen, they feel like they deserve something. They say, I need some me time. That's the thing, me time, right? No, don't do that. Try to spend 20 minutes somewhere in there, 20 minutes a day, and just be purposeful about reconnecting and talking about your experiences. This is fascinating to me. People, I work on an installation 2 days a week. I work on an Air Force installation. There's 26,000 people that work there. It's the largest employer in the state of Utah. And what is fascinating to me is I have worked there now for 8 years, and you start seeing webs of relationships. Like, this person was divorced from that person who had an affair with that person, whose kid now works here as that person. It's like this crazy web of relationships from all of these people on this base. It's crazy. But one of the fascinating things that emerges as you get to know people is that they begin to live a different life on base. So they'll go to work and they kind of live a different life, and then they go home and they shift, and it's another one here. And I've wondered, like, how did that start? I'm going to tell you how it probably started. It probably started by someone who stopped sharing life with their spouse. Like, they started having their experiences at work, or the things that were going on in the office, or the pressures they had from their supervisor, and they just stopped sharing. They just kind of left those at work. And it became its own life there. Now, here's something I know to be true. Experiences change us. Just think about that. Isn't that true? Experiences change us. And if you don't share those experiences, then you end up changing apart from one another. That's why this is so important. Like, I think there's moms that stay at home and they got the kids all day. And what am I going to tell them? The same thing happened. I changed a diaper again today. I washed the dishes again today. What am I going to tell them? I just won't tell them anything. What am I going to tell my wife? I crunch numbers. She won't understand it anyways. I'm not going to tell her what I did today. And then they don't. And years pass, and they have no idea what went on for 8 hours of their day. So I would just say this is actually a very important thing. Think about ways that you can share your experiences through these reunions. Experiences change us, and if we don't share them, then we'll change apart. Here's the third one, admiration and appreciation, just 5 minutes a day. What if you could catch your spouse doing something good? Think about how I phrased that. What if you could catch your spouse doing something good? And then show some appreciation or some admiration for that. Here's what I discovered. We find what we look for. I mean, maybe the reason you always whine and complain to your spouse is because you're looking for things to gripe and nitpick about. But if you were looking for things that were good, if you were looking for things that you could admire or appreciate, you could probably find those. And so what if you just spent 5 minutes each day catching them in good things? Talk about a trait or an action or a memory and praise them and thank them. Okay, affection. Number four, affection. He says 5 minutes a day. Couples that were healthy and happy that he studied over 30 years, he just said they had ways of showing affection. And I would just say this doesn't just mean sex. It means stealing a kiss. It means holding hands. It means sitting close. Come up with ways of demonstrating affection. 5 minutes a day. And then the last thing he said is that they had a weekly date. So observing couples for 30 years, and this is how he said, one of the things that healthy and happy couples did is they continued to date each other. Now, I think there's a difference between young couples and older couples. I think there's a difference when your kids are really small. And so I often encourage people, do a stay date. If you can't go out, you don't have money to go out, or you can't do this, do a stay date. And that means put the kids to bed early and then use the evening for a stay date where you actually talk and you actually have fun and you do something intentional. But you're investing into your marriage. You know, couples that fail to do this, where do they find themselves years down the road? Yeah, apart. Like, they, you know, I watch this happen over and over. They invest in the kids, invest in the kids, invest in the kids, invest in the kids. And at 18, those kids leave, and there's nothing left in their marriage because they haven't been investing in that. So I think this idea of just continuing to date is so important because it continues to fuel the relationship and help it grow through the years. Talk, laugh, romance one another. Don't quit just because you're married. I wonder, do some of you, you're looking at maybe these categories here, do some of you have some parting or reunion or appreciation or dating traditions that you've found helpful that you'd share with our group? I wonder if there's just one or two of you or three of you that maybe share something you've done that has helped your marriage along the way. Who has something that you could share? Yeah. 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 And five minutes. A quick high five. Good. A kiss before you go. Good. Yeah. And have you found that really helpful for you guys? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, good. That's great. Thanks. From Sunday, yeah. I'll bet there's some special memories along the way from that. Thanks, Dale. Anybody else? Something that you've done along the way? Yeah. Yeah, neat. Just some of these are so important, aren't they? That's why I said these are common sense, common grace, but maybe there's one or two of these that maybe you could use some tuning in or something that you could share with someone else. And I thought this is an interesting study that I think it really empowers us to continue doing and encourages us to continue doing what we know is important. I want to talk about love for a minute. And it's fascinating that we can say, I love you. But I think a question that we should consider is, does our spouse really feel loved? Do they feel loved? Because I think that's a little bit different than, well, I told them I love them. Or when they said, I love you, I said, me too. You know? But do they feel loved? So I want you to think about this just in your mind. Don't say it out loud, but just think about the answers to these two. I feel loved when my spouse says this or does this. I feel valued when my spouse does this or says that. Okay, turn your chairs, knee to knee, eye to eye. I want to give you a little worksheet to do. It's a quick one. It won't take very long. Steve. Yeah, one each. Each person gets one. Hey, do you mind spreading those around? Okay, this is called constructing your love map. And what it does is it walks you through just a few quick statements that will help you think about love more like a diamond. In other words, it has different facets or different ways of thinking about love. And so here's what I'd like. I'd like the women to start at the bottom of the page and the men to start at the top of the page. So the men start at the top of that table and the women start at the bottom of that table. And I'd like you just to start filling those in. So don't share them yet. Just work on filling those in. So guys, you start at the top. I feel most loved when, and then describe the circumstance. And you might have an example. I'd encourage you, if you have an example of when your spouse did that, then write that in there too. Jot a little note about that. Women, you're going to start at the bottom. I feel most secure when, and then you'll fill that in. So just take a few minutes here, and I'd like you to start filling them in. Ladies work from the bottom up, men from the top down, because we probably won't have enough time to fill in the whole thing together right now. But I'd like you to fill in a few of them. So you're going to complete the statement with something that's personal. I feel most loved when, you fill it out. But if you have an example of when your spouse did that, then write that down too, because I think that will be helpful when you share. Okay, if you've been able to fill out two of them, if you've been able to fill in two of those blocks, what I'd like you to do now is like you share with each other. So I'd like you can go every other one, but you'll basically just start with the statement, I feel most loved when, and then share that, and then share the example of when that was demonstrated. And then your spouse will start at the bottom, I feel most secure when, and then they'll share that in an example. And go back and forth and share at least two. Okay, we're gonna pause. I know I didn't give you enough time to finish. Some of you hate to start something that you can't finish. You're like, I want to fill in all the blanks. Don't stop me. But we don't have enough time to do it. So what I want to do is I want to make this something that you can continue on your own. Okay, so don't quit this. This is just a tool. But I want to hear from you. How was this experience for you to simply make a statement like that and then try to give an example? So how was it for you giving it? And then how was it for you hearing it? So I'd like to hear from some of you. What was your response to doing something like this? Okay, it was hard. We had to think. Okay.
I think what you said earlier, you know, in the lessons you were talking about, we don't always do that. We always say we're not on the same page. Mm-hmm. You know, so trying to really get on the same page.
Mm-hmm. And this might actually be a cheat sheet for you. Do you realize that? Like, if you'll listen carefully to what your spouse is saying, don't try to correct what they're saying. That's not the point. They didn't get the wrong answer. They're telling you from their heart, like, this is how I feel most valued. Don't be like, no, that's not how you feel valued. It'd be better if you, no, don't do that. You're just listening. They're giving you a cheat sheet, aren't they? Oh, okay, good. This is helping you get on the same page, right? Not doing this, but doing this. Okay, what else? How was the experience for you? Anybody else? Yeah, Mandy. It stings. Why? Okay. Then from him. So you have to kind of listen and be humble. Okay. Who else? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Interesting. Anybody else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The value of something like this is, do you see how it takes love and it breaks it up in little pieces, and it causes us to have to communicate in ways we don't always communicate? So things like, I feel most secure. Most people don't talk in those terms, maybe. Or I feel most understood. I mean, that's a fascinating one. I feel most understood when. Because sometimes I think we have this idea, I'm a great listener. Oh, I'm a great listener. Are you, though? Does that person really feel understood? So somebody's got any other experiences you want to share? We just started this, but any other thoughts on either sharing or receiving? Let's go Tim and then over here to Dale. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Tim. Dale?
Things have changed a lot. Our lives have changed a lot in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so you learn that, you know, she's given me 41 years, now it's my turn to take care of some things that she used to take care of. And that's it's a different thing, but it's a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, Dale, you're bringing up a really great thing. This is not a sheet you fill out once and then you just file it away. So, hey, make sure you go back to that sheet from 20 years ago that I filed. This is actually something you should do regularly. Why? Well, because things change, right? Ages and stages and things happen. I would just suggest that this little section right here, I feel most loved, valued, I feel closest to you, I feel most fulfilled, understood, heard, and secure. Those are just great starter statements to visit regularly. And then let it be a cheat sheet for you to show really specific love, meaningful love for your spouse in these ways. Let it be a cheat sheet. So if you didn't finish, Just take the sheet, put it away, and take it out on a date night and finish it. And let me just say this. This should be a very positive experience. If you get in a fight over this, you're missing the spirit, all right? This should be a very positive experience because you're just sharing, I feel most loved. And you're giving an example of your spouse's success in that. And then it's an indication to them, oh, I want to keep doing that, or I want to do that more. That makes sense? That's what you're trying to do with this exercise. Well, I'd like to show you a video in just a minute. And it's a video from an author named Gary Chapman. And what he does is he talks about love in a way that I think is really helpful for us to think about. And you can buy his book if you'd like. He writes the book from a Christian perspective, but I think in this little video clip, you'll hear his summary. So this is kind of like the book in a minute and 46 seconds. That's what this is. So it's the Cliff's Notes for his book. But as you listen to him, I'm going to give you one more handout so before we start the video, because as you listen to him, I want you to think about yourself, and I want you to think about your spouse. So as you listen, I want you to think about yourself and your spouse. And what you're going to do is you're going to kind of rank each other. So it's a 1 through 5 ranking, where number one is your primary and number 5 would be the least. And I want you to rank yourself and your spouse on these different love languages. So Gary Chapman is the guy who came up with this idea or articulated this idea this way, where he says love comes in different languages. And his idea here is, like, if I spoke Spanish but my wife didn't speak Spanish, and I went up to her and said, te amo, and she doesn't understand Spanish, then she's not going to know what that means, right? Is that correct for all my Spanish speakers in here? Is that how you would say it? Okay, sí, gracias. Okay, so if I said te amo, and she just looks at me, and then I say it louder, te amo, and she just looks at me like, why are you yelling at me, and I don't know what you mean, and then I say it fast, and I say it slow, and I put it in a card, and all these things. She's not getting it. Why? Because I'm not speaking her language. And so his idea here is that our hearts have languages of love that they understand best. And if we really want to communicate love to our spouse, then we need to know what they speak. So take a look at this video and see if you can rank yourself and your spouse, what you think. Don't show each other. Do it secretly. But just rank yourself and your spouse on the right-hand side as you watch the video.
These are words of affirmation, using words to affirm the individual. You look nice in that outfit. Really appreciate what you did. Just verbalizing appreciation. Gifts. Universal to give gifts. The gift says, he was thinking about me. Look what he got for me. Third love language is acts of service, doing something for the other person. In a marriage, that may be cooking a meal, vacuuming floors, washing dishes, you know, anything that you know your spouse would like for you to do, acts of service. Then there's quality time, by which I mean you give them your undivided attention. I'm not talking about sitting on the couch watching television. I'm talking about sitting on the couch with the TV off, looking at each other and talking, or taking a walk together, or going out to eat together. But you give them your undivided attention. And then number 5 is physical touch. In a marriage, holding hands, kissing, embracing, the whole sexual part of the marriage. But physical touch is a powerful communicator of emotional love. And out of the 5, each of us has a primary love language. One of the 5 speaks more deeply to us than the other 4. And in a marriage, almost never does a husband and wife have the same language. So we speak our own language. He speaks words of affirmation to her, and she speaks acts of service to him. But they don't connect because they're speaking their own language rather than the other person's language. So what we're trying to do is help people learn to speak the other person's language. So he speaks her language, she speaks his language, and the love tank fills up. It's a simple concept that's changed literally thousands of marriages.
Okay, so take a second and see if you can finish the ranking. What do you think is the one that speaks most to you, all the way down to least, and then which one do you think speaks most to your spouse, all the way down to least, and see if you can rank them on the right-hand side. I'd like you to do that right now. You have the 5 love languages right there. He just explained them. and see if you can rank those. Don't show your spouse, because I want you to compare in a minute and see if you guessed correctly. Okay, who needs more time? You're still filling it out. You just need a little more time. Okay, just a few of you. Okay. Okay, go ahead and see if you can grade each other's papers. See how you did. Okay, so talk to each other and see if you were on the same page. Like, they're going to say, no, that's not my primary love language. I don't want flowers. I want a long walk. Or see if you figured it out. So go ahead and share some of those things and see how you did at not only sharing who you are, but understanding your spouse. Well, I hope you're able to talk about some of your top ones, like this would be my primary love language, and hopefully you were able to share that with each other. And I would just suggest to you, this would be another great sheet. I know I'm going too quickly through it, but this would be another great sheet to spend some time with and talk this out and use it as a cheat sheet so that you could love your spouse maybe more effectively. Can I tell you where we're at? At this point in this session, here's where we're at. Number one, we were talking about how love is a choice. It's a choice you make every day. You didn't fall into it like a mud puddle or fall out of it like a nest. You made a choice. And that's really from 1 Corinthians 13. Love makes this choice. Love suffers long. It's kind. It doesn't boast in itself. It doesn't seek evil. It rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. It never fails. You make this choice every day. Love is a choice. Here's number two. Love is a contribution. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, I wanted to pick a word that started with the letter C so that it would be parallel, but it means it's something you have to give. Love is something you have to give. If you are embracing some form of love that's all about getting and not about giving, then you don't have biblical love. And I think really a key text for marriage when we're talking about love being a contribution is Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. And this one is specifically focused on husbands. It says, husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church and what? And gave himself for it. He gave. Love is not about your getting. It's about your giving. And if you're making no sacrificial gifts to this person who you've committed your life to, then you're probably not loving them. This one right here, I think, is so important because you sit with people who have gotten to a place in their marriage where they've really turned in on themselves. They're almost ingrown in their souls. They've moved towards self-protection. They've moved towards self-assertion. They've moved towards self-satisfaction. And their relationship has become about themselves. They're protecting themselves. They're pleasing themselves. They're trying to do all these things for themselves. And it turns into this relationship in which they're trying to manipulate this other person so that they can get what they want out of it to please themselves or to protect themselves or to satisfy themselves. And it's no longer about giving. It's about getting. I just think, listen, if you want to do whatever you want to do with your money, if you want to do whatever you want to do with your time, if you want to do whatever you want to do with your vacations or with your whatever, you should stay what?
Single.
Stay single. Please stay single. Yeah, I've said this so many times. Like, listen, if you just want your money for you, if you want your time for you, if you want to do whatever it is you want to do, if you want to wake up when you want to wake up and go to bed whenever you want to go to bed, and if you want to do your own thing, then please stay single. I mean, you're going to be a selfish single person. Yeah, all your life, but please don't destroy a marriage that way, because marriage is not about you. It's not about getting, it's about giving. So it's a choice. It's a choice you make every day, and it's a contribution. I think these last two exercises, I hope that you've seen that you actually have to contribute something to this, like words of affirmation. Give some affirmation, or maybe quality time. Give some time to your spouse. Acts of service, gift giving, physical touch, they're all things you got to give. It's a contribution you make to this lifelong relationship. Well, I want to close by really talking about love in terms of number three, in terms of a covenant. Love in terms of a covenant. I want to play this out a little bit because the word covenant is often not connected to feelings of warmth in most of our minds. It's kind of a biblical word that you associate with the Old Testament. It might be a cold or sterile word that you're saying, it's not really warming my heart to think of covenant. And, you know, when you think of covenant, I don't know where your mind goes, but my mind goes to some of the Old Testament ones or even some of the history of the idea of covenant. If you were to go back to ancient Near Eastern cultures, the ones where like Abraham lived in, a covenant was something that was commonly practiced. A covenant was a promise or a vow, a treaty or a contract. I mean, some of those words may help you understand what a covenant is. And basically the way they would do that is there would be this agreement between two parties. And the way they would play it out is they would take an animal. This happened not just with Abraham, but with other countries. They did this. This is how they did it. They didn't have a long scroll and both people signed at the bottom of a scroll like a contract that we use today. Instead, they did a covenant. And the way they did a covenant is they bring an animal and they cut this animal in half. And you can almost imagine the guts and the blood and all the gross stuff is like flopping down in the middle, and they put these two halves of an animal like this. And these two parties make an agreement, and then what they do is they walk in between the two severed halves of this animal. And they say something like this to themselves. This happened throughout the ancient Near East. They said something like this. And may this happen to me if I violate the terms of this covenant. That's what they would say. May this happen to me. May I be slaughtered like this if I violate this covenant. Now, it's fascinating that sometimes people will take the word covenant and connect it with marriage. They'll say, this is a marriage covenant. And I think it's an appropriate connection. even think about our vows. Remember, we've been talking about them all weekend. You stand in front. There's a preacher or a clerk from a courthouse, and he's there, and these two people are here, and they make vows to one another. They actually sign a marriage license or certificate, right? I mean, it's like there's a covenant that's happening here. But I want to tell you, we've taken all the blood and the guts out of it, haven't we? Because those don't make for great photo shoots. Like, can you imagine these days, the weddings these days, like tens of thousands of dollars, and you got these camera people, and they're shooting from different angles, and they want to get it just right. And I do these weddings, like I just did a few weeks ago, and you're just like, there's a camera person over here, they're running down filming this and that. And can you imagine, here's this woman in this long white train, and she's got this beautiful dress on, and she comes down dragging it in between the carcasses of these dead animals, saying, "I covet." It just wouldn't make the front of, you know, bridal magazine. It's just not the way it is. But I would just suggest to you that there has been blood that's been shed, and there has been a covenant that's been made that can actually hold you two together. I mean, I want you to think in terms of covenant. Think in terms of covenant, because Jesus, I don't know if you remember this, is in Matthew chapter 26, verse 28, Jesus lifts the cup at the Last Supper. Matthew 26, 28, he says, this is the New Testament, or the new, it's the same word, the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for the remission of sins. And he did something in your heart so that this covenant, blood was spilled. Why? So that this covenant could mean something. And could make you into something that would be a light for all who see. I mean, have you ever thought about your marriage, not just in terms of your own happiness, but God has actually done something in your relationship that's supposed to be a picture to everybody? I think that's why Ephesians 5:25 is so significant. Like, husbands love your wives like Christ loved the church. It's because he designed from the start of humanity, from when he created Eve and brought her to Adam, he designed through all humanity that there would be this picture or this shadow through humanity that would point to a beautiful reality. Every marriage was supposed to point to his love for his people. And that was sealed with a covenant of blood. And I just want to suggest to you that marriage is a covenant. It's one that's made whole and complete and fulfilled through the covenant of Jesus' blood and how he calls you to live. A great marriage is one that increasingly reflects the love that Christ shows for his church as revealed in the word. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to just end with one last story because we're out of time this morning. It's a story about a ship that's in Long Beach, California. How many of you have seen this ship, the RMS Queen Mary? A number of you. And so you know some of its history. It was retired in 1967. It was built in 1936. So those of you who have been there, you saw it. I mean, built in 1936. What was its purpose when it was built? I'm going to quiz some of you. It was built for a particular purpose. What was it going to be used for? Yeah, it was supposed to be a luxury ocean liner, right? A transcontinental luxury ocean liner. I mean, it actually had miles of carpet, plush carpet in it. It had mahogany wood chandeliers. It had tennis courts. It had libraries. I mean, this was going to be an amazing ship for its day. It was a luxury cruise liner, and it was supposed to be crossing the Atlantic with wealthy people filling it. I mean, it could transport 3,000 people at a time. It was an amazing, amazing ship. Well, it was built in 1936, and as you know, we entered World War II soon after, right? So they took this cruise liner and they repurposed it. They painted the whole thing gray. It got another name. It was called the Gray Ghost. It could travel with such speed, it could be unescorted. The U-boats couldn't keep up with the speed of the ship. It was used for 1,001 transcontinental traversing the Atlantic Ocean, transporting more than 735,000 troops on this ship, back and forth to the war zone and back, war zone and back. And this thing was just heavily utilized during World War II. If you'll notice something from the picture, it has these three iconic smokestacks. Do you see them there? Now, I don't know what you think the size of those are from the picture, but actually those were seven stories tall. They were about 70 feet tall, 36 feet wide at their widest part, made with inches of plated steel. Well, when this ship began to be used in the war effort, it was so heavily utilized that they didn't maintain it like it should be. In other words, they just had to keep using it. They couldn't pause. And so what they did is, instead of doing the maintenance that was required, they just painted those smokestacks. They just painted them. And they actually painted them more than 30 times during the war. I mean, so anytime you look at it, you're like, look at the shiny paint. You know, like, those look great. Look at how shiny they are. But you can imagine with the heat and moisture of more than 1,000 Atlantic crossings, there was probably something going on the inside. And if you guessed that, you're right. There was deterioration that was happening on the inside of those smokestacks. But what did they do? They just kept painting the outside. They finally retired this ship, and they decided it's time to do maintenance on these things. They hooked up a crane to these smokestacks to pull these off and put them on the dock to service them. And can you imagine what happened? They hook up the crane, they bring it over, they set the smokestack on the dock, and what happens? The thing crumbles. What was holding it together? The paint. And when I read that story, I thought to myself, wow, how many relationships are like that? I mean, how many relationships show up to like a retreat or show up to our churches or are our friends or neighbors? And what do? When you come over, you engage them, they paint the outside. You say, hey, how are you doing? And they say, fine. How are you doing? How are things going? Great. But what they do is just put another coat of paint on, don't they? And on the inside, there's things that are deteriorating. I just want to encourage you, if you came to this retreat and there's something that stood out to you, if the Lord did something in your heart from one of these texts of Scripture or one of these common grace principles, then don't ignore it. Don't just keep functioning. Because if the foundation of your marriage is deteriorating, you can only function so long. Pretty soon it's going to collapse. So take the time you need. Maybe this afternoon, maybe on your drive back home, take the time you need to strengthen the inside. Don't just put another coat of paint on the outside. The Lord knows our hearts, and He knows what we need.